Hello and welcome to another weekly teaching from Vineyard Community Church, St. Louis.
Hitting on the thing of Jesus lifted up, this series, and you know, as we follow Jesus and the passion of Jesus, and Greek means passion, this could be interpreted as suffering of Jesus, this place, especially from the garden, even the Lord's Supper, to all the way through this place of his crucifixion, and we experience that his passionate love for us as he suffered for our sake, what we can see in those moments is this place of the kingdom of God's power. We see this power struggle that's going on between Jesus' kingdom and the kingdom of this world, or the kingdom of Satan. And so, you know, Jesus makes this very clear from the very beginning. A verse that we use often is this, that it talks about that the enemy, the devil, came to kill, steal, and destroy, but I came that you have life to full. Paul talks about it in Ephesians, saying, you have to understand, when we struggle on this earth, these struggles that go on, there's something behind them. It's not just flesh and blood. There's spiritual powers of darkness that are after us. There's a spot, there's a true battle that goes on. And we have to make sure that we know how to stand in times, it says, of the day of evil, the times when evil is manifest. How do we hold up? What does it mean to hold up and stand against that? The unique thing is, even though it is not a flesh and blood struggle, evil and good comes through people. It's expressed both evil and good. The outlet it comes through is people. You know, there are times in which that we can imagine it with us, as far as there's times when God's power comes in a strong way, his manifest presence of his kingdom comes, and good happens, amazing things happen. But there's this other time in which evil is expressed, and many people don't do well, and damage occurs as we go through it. An example would be like this. It's like we talk a lot about the place, and when the power of the kingdom, when Jesus' kingdom is coming through people, right? It's just amazingly powerful. A story I've used before, but it's worth telling again, of course, as all stories of mine are worth telling again, is that one time when I was in the Bay Area, I just had moved into the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area, and there was some young people. I was old. I was in my 30s back then. And for you old 30-year-olds old, you know what this feels like. So, but they were 20-year-olds, and they had this big house in Menlo Park, California, and they had all these gals that lived there, and they're going to have a big party and just invite whoever. They talked to neighbors and said, we're going to have cars up and down the street. You can come over if you want. And so they had this big party. And I was just brand new to the church. I knew nobody. And I remember walking in, and when I walked in, I was just amazed. I mean, these people were just loved Jesus, but it was like there was break dancing going on, and they're cooking in the kitchen, and there was someone else praying for someone else over here, and some people were worshiping upstairs, and other people were talking about what God did, and it was just this hodgepodge of a buzz. And I thought, man, I'm old, but it was energy, right? And to the point that the neighbor came over, right? And he's hanging around, but he's not a Christian, but he's like, this is a great group, you know? And he's talking, people are talking to him. And in the middle of this, they stop from breakdancing because someone comes in with this new worship CD. And they say, have you heard this? No. And so they put the CD into the stereo. CDs are this thing, they're round, they're, you know, they some of you guys still have them. And they put on the CD, cranked it up, and all of a sudden, everybody just spontaneously, because that's what you do in worship, they just started worshiping. Like they're just in the living room, packed out, just at the top of their lungs. And we looked over, and they looked over, and the neighbor was there, and he was doing it. His hands were up, and here's what he said. He turned to his friend, to a stranger, what was going on. He says, what is this? And the friend says, it's worship. He goes, I love the way it feels. I mean, when the power of God comes, it just makes it easy to respond. And it softens the heart. But then there's also times when evil moves forward. And when evil moves forward, it does the opposite. It hardens the heart. And it brings destruction. I've been thinking about this kind of embarrassing, shameful moment in my life a lot, I think because God's wanting to help me get past it. Some reason I've thought of it quite a bit over the last couple of years, and it was in grade school and junior high, and there's this kid that lived pretty close. His name was George McCauley. And George was slightly overweight, and he didn't wear very cool clothes, and he had his teeth stuck out quite a bit, right? And so that's like, you're just waiting for it back in that school I was part of. Like, and George, I remember walking out, and there was a bunch of kids surrounding him, swinging him around by his hood and mocking him. And I remember as a young grade schooler not knowing what to do. I just froze up and I just went home and didn't talk to anybody about it. Scene two, junior high, years later, I'm walking home. There's a big crowd around George again, mocking him, harassing him, women, girls and boys, all around him, and these certain boys. You know what I did? I stood around and watched and then act like nothing was going wrong, and I went home. And so the thing about it is that was an evil thing, but it came through people, and people got influenced by it, to the place that I was somebody who didn't do anything. Other kids joined in, other people watched and laughed. And evil is just really ugly. You know that? So as we go through this story, we have to understand this is happening. This place of this story, I'll have you click my slide when I tell you to, whoever's doing this slide. The next one, we've had some issues with our thing here today. Yeah, there we go. I don't think it's clicking. All right. So as we go through this, as we look through it, we look at this kind of progression of darkness growing through this story. You notice that? You think, can it get any worse? Oops, it got a little bit worse, and it gets a little bit worse. We see this place of evil kind of spreading as we go through it. And as we look at that, we see that we're going to be talking today about this place of Jesus and this place where he was tortured and condemned. Okay, you can go to the next slide. Isaiah, 700 years before Jesus, explained this was going to happen, prophesied about the Christ. I'm just going to read some sections of Isaiah. He will be raised up and highly exalted. But just as there are many who were appalled by him, his appearance was so disfigured beyond that of any human being, and his form marred beyond human likeness. Nations over the world will be in awe, taken aback, the king shocked into silence when they see him. He was despised and rejected by mankind, a man of suffering, and familiar with pain, like one whom people hide their face, he was despised. And we held him in low esteem. Surely he took up our pain and bore our sufferings. Yet we consider him punished by God and stricken by him and afflicted. But he was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. The punishment that brought us peace was on him. By his wounds, we are healed. The next slide in John 19, it starts this story that we're continuing on in John. And I'm just going to go through this, and I want you to, again, put yourself into this story and imagine the place of how this felt. You know, it says, Pilate took Jesus and flogged him. And when it says flogs him, it's this place in which they tied him up, stripped him, made him bend over, and he's often tied into a post, and took these leather whips with these leather strands, and they had pieces of bone and glass and metal in them, and they would hit until the persons, the Romans, would hit until the back was just raw flesh. And often it was not unusual for someone to die before they got to the crucifixion. And then the soldiers twisted together a crown of thorns and put it on his head. They clothed him in a purple robe and went up to him again and again, saying, "Hail, King of the Jews!" And they slapped him on the face. We look at other accounts, it says, in Mark, it says, again and again they struck him in the head with their staff and spit on him, falling to their knees, mocking him as they worshiped him, pretended to worship him. Once more, Pilate came out and said to the Jews gathered there, "Look, I am bringing him out to you to let you know I find no basis for a charge against him." When Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe, Pilate said to them, "Here's the man." As soon as the chief priests and the officials saw him, they shouted, "Crucify, crucify." But Pilate answered, "You take him and crucify him. As for me, I find no basis for a charge against him." And in John 19:1, it continues on, it says, "The Jewish leaders insisted, 'We have a law according to, we have a law, and according to that law, he must die, because he has claimed to be the Son of God.' And when Pilate heard this, he was even more afraid." Now, when he was afraid, it's the Greek word there is he became exceedingly afraid. He became panicked. And it wasn't because of this rowdy crowd. It was because Jesus' presence and the kingdom, and he was sensing that. He was sensing the authority that was the kingdom over himself, and he was thinking about putting this person to death. So he went back inside the palace. "Where have you come from?" he asked Jesus, but Jesus gave him no answer. "Do you refuse to speak to me?" Pilate said. "Don't you realize I have power either to free you or to crucify you?" Jesus answered, "You would have no power over me if it were not given to you from above. Therefore, the one who handed me over to you is guilty of the greater sin." From then on, Pilate tried to set Jesus free, but the Jewish leaders kept shouting, "If you let this man go, you are no friend to Caesar. Anyone who claims to be a king opposes Caesar." He goes on to say, "When Pilate heard this, he brought Jesus out and set him down on the judgment seat." There's this mosaic tile that was raised up that he set him down on. Known as the stone pavement. And it was the day of the preparation of the Passover, and it was about noon. Now, at this moment, even Pilate's wife's warning him, "Don't do this. I had a dream about this guy. There's something. He's innocent, and there's something powerful about him." And so she is basically warning him, but he goes ahead and sits him down. And it says, "But they shouted, 'Take him away. Take him away. Crucify him.'" And then Pilate says, "Shall I crucify your king?" Pilate asked. "We have no king but Caesar," the chief priest answered. Finally, Pilate handed over to them. To be crucified. Now, and then after this, we see in the other text in which Pilate now, goes to this thing where he shows him, "I'm innocent of this blood." He washes his hands, and he says, "Now this is your responsibility." And here's what the people said. All the people answered, "His blood is on our hands and our children." Right? Now, when we look at this, and we look at the next slide, it'll show you this place of like thinking about all these moments that took place in these events as we go through. It just keeps getting more shocking as far as the evil that keeps advancing, right? It just keeps going to a place. And if you think about Judas and how much evil that was that he sold out and and betrayed him with a kiss. And then it goes to this next level in which that, you know, Pilate, he has three times, he says he's completely innocent. He has a prophetic dream, and yet, even knowing that, he turns him over to be beaten and scourged. And then after that, he turns him over to be crucified. And then we look at the way the soldiers come around him and mock him and beat him and harass him and humiliate him. But probably, as Jesus mentions, the greatest offense, the greatest sin is the Jewish leaders, which quickly moved to the crowd as well. Because the Jewish leaders, it's like this place in which that, you know, they got to a point. I just think about this. These are Jewish leaders who are in charge and have the place of being the priest, the mediator of God. They're the people who tithe on everything they get to make sure they don't mess up. They follow, they memorize the law. They know it inside and out. They just are dedicated. And this is the Passover, right? This is this religious feast. And in the middle of this religious feast, they shout out loud, now think about this, with everybody in public to the governor, the Roman government, "We have no other king but Caesar. Crucify him. His blood is on our hands and our children's hands." Now, next slide, it just shows that we're at this place of the heart is deceitful, it says in Jeremiah, above all things and beyond cure, who can understand it? This is a part that, you know, I talked about last week, like, where would I be? Would I be in the crowd? What would I be doing in the crowd? How would that look? And it's that's something that stirs me. I mean, I don't know if I was in those situations where I would be. But what I can see here is that what is happening here is evil is coming forth from people, and it's coming because it was in those people. You know, it says in Matthew that the mouth speaks what the heart is full of. A good man brings out good things that are stored up in him. An evil man brings up evil things that are stored up in him. And then it goes on to talk about this place that when we give ourselves over to things of evil and we make actions, it actually causes us to, it defiles us, and it bursts sin, and it comes from our heart. Now, I know this sounds like a very depressing message, but what we have to understand is we have to really watch our heart. The Pharisees, this didn't just come at one moment. You know, they didn't become cheerleaders saying this, plotting for paying off people and covering up, you know, after Judas gives back the money, they're covering up that to try to figure out what do we do with the money he gave us back and he went and hung himself. This is all going on at the same time. It's a real mess. I mean, evil is just coming out like crazy. Where'd this come from? It came from their heart. And they didn't watch their heart, and their heart built to a level in which that it all came out at this time. Now, you can see Jesus spotting that all the way through his ministry as he talks to the Pharisees. We couldn't see it so well until now, but it was there. And I say that because it's important when, you know, we're at a spot in which that, you know, we have to understand how do we respond when evil is manifest. You know, what do we do? How do we, like it says in Ephesians, how do we stand our ground and not get pulled into it? You know, I don't know about you guys, but this last year has shaken me up a bit. Not violently, but quite a bit. And, you know, I always use that example that you're tired of, you know, a cup, shaking it. Water flies out of it. Why did water fly out of it? Because it was in it, right? When we're shaken up, things that are in us, both good and bad. And I can say, honestly, during this last year, I've seen some really good things that God's done in my life held up. And it's so encouraging that God did that. I know it wasn't me, that it held up. And I was able to make good choices in lots of situations. But I had other times in which that evil was very close. And there was things in my heart that were just stirred up too. And I had to figure out, how do I stand against this? How do I not get swept away with all the temptation in this environment that it's so easy to get swept away in? And as I looked at this, I just found myself thinking about this place of our heart and understanding, really, this is our safety. This is our place that allows us to do well. It's when we pay close attention to our heart. Because I don't really know where the future is going to go, but I know that we're going to have moments in which we're going to have times of evil. We're going to have maybe moments of evil, and we might have days of evil, but we can expect that because it promises in Scripture. The question is, how do we do well in evil? How do we do that? And I think a lot of it is this place in which that we have to understand it's going to shake us up and it's going to cause us to see things our heart, and we have to decide what we do when those things come forward, with those things that are there. You know, that's why Jesus says, you want to be blessed? Here's how you do it. Pure heart. You know, God, give me a pure heart because I'll be blessed. I'll be able to stand up to evil with a pure heart. David says, search me, God, know my heart, test me, know my anxious thoughts. If you see anything in me, show it to me so I can take it before you and get it cleared up. Proverbs says, listen to this, above all else, that includes most everything, guard your heart, for everything you do flows from it. Now, as a pastor, I do think about you guys a lot. And I think about our church, and I think about the church, the Big C Church. And really what I pray a lot about is this place of, do we have what it takes to overcome evil with good? Do we know how to stand? Do we know how to stay pure in heart, sensitized? Because when evil comes, the temptation is for every one of us is to harden our heart in some way, dull it in some way. And God's saying, no, don't dull your heart. Guard your heart. Keep your heart soft. Allow me to help you with that heart that's hard to figure out. Now, getting back to George Macaulay. By the way, George, if you're listening, call me up. I got to talk to you. So I've tried to track him down. I can't find him anymore, but I'm still looking. But as I think about that, I think, what should I have done? When I was a kid, I was scared. These are really mean kids that seem like they beat me up pretty bad. If I, I'm just a kid. I've tried to figure that out, right? Should I have taken a big stand, started swinging, or what should I have done? You know, should I have started screaming? I don't know. As I thought about it, I feel like as I prayed about it, I felt like God just said, you should have just joined him. You should have just joined him. You should have just been on his side. And I thought, well, wait, if I do that, guess what? I'm going to have to suffer with him. I will suffer. And Jesus said, yeah, that's right. The way we advance the kingdom is this place that's so upside down in how we think. It's by softening our heart and joining in loving people, even if it brings about pain. And in that, we find Jesus in a way that's amazing. That's what Paul writes when he says, I want to know Christ. I want to know the power of his resurrection. I want to know the fellowship of his suffering. I want to know the participating in his suffering. Right? So, what I just want to encourage us to do is this place that, you know, the church strength, the church's power is this thing of the kingdom of God in which that we choose to love and give ourselves to. We choose to speak truth. We choose to align with the heart of Jesus and be a part of that, even if it causes us pain. And then when we experience that pain, we experience this amazing fellowship with him, even through that pain. So, the worst team can come up. I just have a couple things for the invitation. The way we do an invitation here is we try to talk about what can you do? And I'm going to say, don't put this one off. There's something about things that when we're stirred to make a conscious choice, because I know you guys, some of you guys are just, I did that invitation, I'm so people. Some of you never done an invitation in your life, and we keep bringing it up, right? But I'm just saying is if you feel like it would be a good thing to do, then choose right now, I'm going to do this invitation. I'm actually going to do it, and just maybe tell your spouse or the next person you see or write it on your hand, I promise I want to do this thing, right? First part of the invitation is for how do you move towards Jesus? Spend time with God. And I would say an extended time, not with anything else, just with this, maybe with a journal in front of you, today, and ask him to show you your heart. And he'll show you the good things, and he'll show you the other things. He's not going to just show you the bad things. He's going to show you your heart. Ask him to soften your heart wherever it's become hard in some place. Ask him to purify your heart in a place that you've taken in things and you need to be cleaned up. And then ask him to guard your heart. And then moving others towards Jesus, it really is just what Romans 12:21 says, do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. And what I think that means is to be light in darkness. When you see darkness, you know, you just don't walk on. You don't just make it okay. You don't just dull your heart. You don't just get angry. You move in with the light that God has given you, and you bring God's righteousness. Now, righteousness always is hard for us to understand. That's a good thing. It's good righteousness. It means that we bring in God's righteousness, his love, his mercy, his truth, into the places of unrighteousness, the place that there is evil, where people are have hatred and perversion and injustice and self-righteousness, pride and judgment. When you see that happening, bring God's righteousness into that, right? And there will be times that you'll see the power of the resurrection. Boom! It just changes the whole scene. And there's other times that you're going to take some flack for it. And you're going to feel some pain because you're siding with Jesus and you're saying yes to what God's heart is. And in that pain, don't harden your heart. Let that pain actually cause you to turn to God and experience his fellowship, because he gets it.